Lakotei Deburim, Volume 1, Chapter 1. At an evening Suda of Shmini Atzeres 5693 Tafresh Sadi Gimel, 1932, in the Sukkah Riga. The Friedrich Rebbe begins the Faring. Thinking is potent. Not only is thought the first and innermost of the three garments or levushim of the soul, and united with it, thinking produces results that extend into the realm of action. Concentrating on a good thought concerning another is in itself an act, though it is an act only in the context of the world of thought. It still needs to pass through the succeeding stages of speech and practical action. At this point, the subject turned to the members of the Hasidic Brotherhood who were then in Russia, and some of the past and present yeshiva students, Tamimim and older Hasidim Anash, were mentioned by name. The Rebbe proceeded. Thought knows no bounds. No partition can stand in its way. At all times, it reaches its required destination. One of those present who had recently reached Riga from Russia then asked, "But what benefit does the other party have from that?" "He benefits in rich measure," replied the Rebbe. After a long pause, the Rebbe turned to the questioner, "And where were you last Sukkot?" It is known and certain that thinking bears fruit. As everyone knows from his own experience, thinking is a starting point for action, which comes into being after a certain progression from one spiritual level to the next. Our sages teach us that the measure in which blessing is given is greater than the measure of punishment. The word for measure, midah, also signifies garment, as in the verse which says, "And Aaron shall put on his garments of linen," or, "And Shaul clothed David in his garments." The measure of punishment, midah paranias, thus means garments that bring punishment. This refers to evil thoughts and imaginings, since thought, as mentioned above, is the first of the three levushim, or garments of the soul. For these not only diminish the divine image in man, but undermine and even, God forbid, destroy one's physical health. But the measure in which blessing is given is greater than the measure of punishment. This measure of goodness, midah tova, refers to those garments of the soul that elicit good. In general, these are thoughts of Torah and of divine service, meditation and prayer. In regard to Torah thoughts, this does not mean merely thinking about Torah subjects, but the kind of profound contemplation that arouses one to practical action. In relation to one's fellow, thinking is likewise potent. With a thought, one can help another, especially since a concentrated thought is a basis for action.
Lakotei Deburim, Book 1, Chapter 3. In a letter to Rav Dov Ber, the Maggid of Mizrich, dated Erev Sukkot 5521, 1760, Rav Pinchas of Karetz writes, "Many thanks for having called me to mind on Yom Kippur. You should know that at the very moment I was privileged to be thus remembered, I felt it here." Now this incident indeed needs to be understood at its innermost level, for if viewed superficially, it involves no remarkable spiritual achievement at all. Love is manifested at many levels, and the modes of conduct, which are the vessels through which the light of love is revealed, are patterned in harmony with the various levels of this light. The first level among the vessels, or vehicles of love, is extending one's hand and offering or receiving the greeting of Shalom. This is only an external mannerism. To be sure, for around the world, whenever people meet, they shake hands as a mark of recognition, which need not imply any feelings of love whatsoever. In truth, however, this very superficiality has been brought about by today's worldly coolness. In days gone by, the ordinary Shalom Aleichem was different. It was true and pure. Things used to be different. Truth used to be sound currency. Coins, too, come in various denominations. You have a tzivir, a pitak, a ruble, and so on. But a true little tzivir was worth its true value, because people themselves were true. Their everyday Shalom Aleichem and Aleichem Shalom were true, because people themselves were warm. Their ordinary midweek Shalom Aleichem and Aleichem Shalom were warm. And when two Jews met, their Shalom Aleichem and Aleichem Shalom sprang from the very life within. The current acceptance of worldly notions has indeed introduced a certain order into the conduct of people's lives. but within it a certain frigidity, a certain absence of truth, and occasionally a lie. In today's ordinary greetings of Shalom Aleichem, one can sometimes or even often detect a go in good health. But the true Torah-inspired Shalom Aleichem, the Shalom Aleichem by bygone days, is a vehicle for the light of love.
When two friends meet and kiss each other, one sees a manifestation of a greater light of love than that expressed in a handshake. A yet higher manifestation may be observed in the long conversation in which friends love to tell each other of all their experiences. Beyond this, there is a kind of love so intense that words are too dry to express it. Two friends in this state can simply stand and gaze at each other without uttering a word. These, then, are various ways in which friends express their love, the bond which brings them to oneness. But there is also an inward bond, a bond of thought, through which one friend senses the other. Just as a person sees his friend who stands facing him near at hand, so it is with thought, which is not limited by distance. Through thought alone, one man is aware of his friend. Just as the friends of Eov felt his plight despite their distance from him. Speaking in terms of the various levels in the soul of man, their sensitivity belongs to the realm of midos, feelings and attributes of character. For they were men of refined character, it cannot be placed in the realm of intellect. True indeed, this sensitivity indicates beauty of midos, attributes of the kind which characterize the level of man. But they are after all midos, and midos exists as well in the animal kingdom. It thus follows that even the beauty of midos does not yet represent the ultimate standard of perfection of the spiritual level, which is the exclusive province of man. A magnate, by way of analogy, might build his animals a magnificent stable, but it is still a stable. So too midos, be they ever so beautiful, do not yet represent the ultimate perfection of man's exalted state. If, therefore, we take the incident superficially, there is nothing wondrous about the fact that despite the physical distance between them, Rav Pinchas of Karetz was aware of the moment at which the Maggid of Mezrich had called him to mind. It must be obvious that my intention here is not, God forbid, to belittle the value of the incident. Quite the contrary, because our limited minds cannot plumb the depth of the holy words of these tzaddikim, we are obligated to endeavor to comprehend each word in an orderly manner. And by approaching the story by this means, we can learn that this point marks the revelation of the path which the Alter Rebbe was later to pave and follow, namely, the teaching that through thought a person should be with his friends wherever he may be. This is the meaning of the above statement that a concentrated thought is a starting point for action, that with a thought one can help a distant friend materially and spiritually. And this is the point of Rav Pinchas's letter. What is remarkable is not that Rav Pinchas was aware of the Maggid's thought. What is remarkable is that by calling him to mind, the Maggid accomplished an actual deed. For with a thought, one can indeed help a distant friend reach a higher state of being, both materially and spiritually. From every letter of Torah and prayer, a good angel is created. During the days of Or, Rosh Hashanah, and Yom Kippur, some 17 million Jews pray, read Tehillim, study Torah, and do good deeds. And from all these activities, angels are created. This sets up a tumult in heaven, as vast hosts of angels arrive there, a troop of angels from each country where they were created from the prayers of ardent worshippers, as they cried out, Kadosh Ata, holy are you, V'chein tem pachtecha, instill fear of you upon all you have created, V'simloich, you shall reign, Meloich ala elam kuloi, reign over the entire world, Unesan etekef, we shall express the might, and so on, throughout the prayers of the days of awe. Now these exclamations of holy are you, and you will reign, vary from country to country, according to the state of affairs in each region. Those proceeding from Russia cause a great stir, for they are an outcry of physical suffering and spiritual anguish. But then comes the time of the joyful angels of Simchas Torah, the angels created by the exultant verses of Ata Arisa, and now the angels from Russia occupy pride of place. For now, forlorn in his dark house, sits a hungry Jew. His wife and children are famished and broken in spirit.
His heart weeps for his lot and for theirs. He almost despairs, God forbid, that things could ever improve. But suddenly he remembers that today is Simchas Torah. A gleaming ray of rollicking memories strikes his whole being like a lightning bolt. He sprints, his spirits are raised. He runs off to the local base medresh for hakafos and leaps into the circle of dancers. Elikei haruchai, soishiyana, he cries out, God of all spirits, deliver us, examiner of all hearts, grant us success, mighty redeemer, answer us on the day we call. And he grasps the wooden handles of the nearby Sefer Torah and sings at the top of his voice, Sisu v'simcha b'simchas Torah, rejoice and exult on Simchas Torah. Men of this kind are envied not only by all the angels of the heavens, but even by the loftiest souls, the souls of Tzaddikim, souls connected with all their brethren, souls whose abode is the supernal world of Atzilus. They too envy the self-sacrificing Mesiras Nefesh, the pure innocence of the simple faith. Such a Mesiras Nefesh Jew is cherished and held sacred in all the worlds. Together with such Jews, we should now proceed to Hakafis. And it is clear and certain that thought is potent. May the Almighty accept everyone's requests and the prayers which seek to arouse his compassion. May he soon free those people and us as well from suffering, so that they will be able to observe the Torah and the mitzvahs at their heart's ease. And if the exile as ordained, requires that things should be, God forbid, as they have been until now, let the Almighty send down angels. Then we will see what benefit we will have from them, just as they have shown in other days when they have come down to this world. On Rosh Hashanah 5650, 1889, my father delivered the Hasidic discourse which begins with the words Hayoim Haras Olam, today the world was born, and which appears in the course of the Maimer beginning Tiku of that year. On that occasion, alluding to the similarity between haras and reses, meaning trembling, my father expounded the above phrase to mean, today, the world trembles. He resumed this theme a few weeks later after Kiddush on Simchas Torah. Kiddush used to be recited at the home of my grandmother, Rebbe Sin Rivka, the wife of Rebbe Marash, and this would be the occasion for a farbringen. He now added, on the eve of Rosh Hashanah, the world is like someone who feels faint and who shudders in anxiety while waiting for his life force to be restored to him. On Simchas Torah, when the blessings Shehechiyanu is recited over the renewed reading of the Torah, the world calms down. In the year 5648, 1888, my father was elected Gabbai of the Chevra Kadisha in Lubavitch. And according to the custom of the time, he was conducted to the synagogue with a canopy spread out overhead. Arriving there, he stood at the lectern and delivered a mimer which opened with the Talmudic phrase, "Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ba betrunya," the Almighty does not confront his creatures with unfair demands. A central theme in this discourse is a contrast between intellectuals, Balei Meichin, and men of simple faith, Anashim Pshutim, with regard to divine service. Whenever there is a call to duty in the Torah observant community, the unsophisticated believer is ready to act without spiritual preparations and introductions. If, for example, a new Torah school is needed, it is he who contributes the first tzvir. Devotedness to the point of self-sacrifice is no difficult thing for him. An intellectual, by contrast, thinks, then thinks again, and in the end, intellect does not grant its consent to the super-rational, self-sacrificing demands of Mesiras Nefesh. A relative of ours once lived in Lubavitch, a grandson and namesake of my grandfather's great-uncle, Reb Chaim Avraham, the son of the Alter Rebbe. For a time, he lived in Moscow for business reasons, so he was known as Avraham Moskver. He was a man of sound understanding, a bar das, but a maskil, one whose approach to divine service has intellectualization as its starting point. His observance of the mitzvahs in practice was impeccable. It was only that he had a certain way of thinking things over, and occupied his mind with philosophical speculation, chakira. My father once said to him, Avraham, repent, and do your tshuva like a man of simple faith, like an ish pashut, without the artful antics of the speculative mind. My father then explained to him at length the subject of the above-mentioned mimer, and went on as follows. If, God forbid, you don't, then whether in a year's time I do not know, but in 2 years' time he will be in the world of truth. My father did not say he. He addressed him directly in the second person, but I do not want to say such things in the second person. My father continued, whether where you will be situated will be a world of truth, I do not know. One of those present asked the Rebbe what came of this encounter. The Rebbe replied, Rabbi Avraham confirmed by a handshake that he would do as he was instructed. It seems, however, that he did not fulfill his undertaking, for within the next 2 years, he traveled to America, and immediately after his arrival, his wife was left widowed and his children fatherless. News of this reached home, and my father was most grieved.